Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. President Zelensky of Ukraine to New York to speak to the UN, to Washington to meet with the president and significant members of Congress about continued support of Ukraine in its contest with the Russian Federation and China and their allies in Pyongyang and Tehran. What is to be done? I welcome Josh Rogan of the Washington Post, writing Global Opinions, who's going to introduce us to a story that's just emerging about reluctance in Washington for a third winter and a third year of war in Europe. Josh, a very good evening to you. Representative Michael Waltz of Florida and Representative Pat Ryan of New York. They're in different parties, but they're looking now candidly at where the Ukraine support is in Washington. And what do they see? Good evening to you, Josh.
Well, good evening, John. Well, for the first 480 some odd days or whatever of the Ukraine war, the conventional wisdom in Washington had always been that Republicans opposed to Ukraine aid were few and far between, a small group of far right MAGA members who could be controlled by their leadership. As of today, that's no longer a statement that anyone can truthfully make. The truth is that the Republican Party is quickly souring on Ukraine aid. And when it comes up for a vote in the next couple of weeks, there's a very significant chance that at least 100, maybe more Republicans will vote against it. There's a significant chance the effort to renew the funding, $24 billion this time to add on top of the $113 billion the United States has already committed. There's a chance that that effort could fail. And this is not something that I think the Biden administration has internalized, although they're starting to. And it's definitely not something the Ukrainian government was aware of, although now they must be, because, as you alluded to, President Zelensky was in Washington this week. And, you know, he ran into a buzzsaw. And what happened was when he went to see House Speaker Kevin McCarthy, McCarthy refused to be seen walking into the room with him. That's the reality of the situation. The Speaker of the House did not want to be photographed with the president of Ukraine because he thought it was politically bad for him. And who knows, that calculation may be right politically, but it's also a very stark depiction of what's going on in our Ukraine policy. So Mike Waltz and Pat Ryan, who are really middle-of-the-road guys, military veterans who understand both the costs of fighting, helping Ukraine win, and the risks of not helping them, and who both agree that it's an American interest to do it, are nevertheless now divided on the fact of whether or not Americans should have to fork over their hard-earned money for it. And I just think that this is quickly becoming the most important and most explosive issue in foreign policy in Washington.
Waltz and Ryan, the representatives, both sit on the Armed Services Committee. Do they comment on the trend in the committee? I know on the floor we can count heads, but in the committee, is there also dissent about continuing aid? We see each day or each week a new weapon system being revealed for Ukraine. Is there hesitation at the committee level as well?
Right. Well, you know, as a data point, when the defense authorization bill passed out of the committee last month, it passed 57-1. In other words, the Democrats and the Republicans all agreed except for one guy. And so, you know, in general, these are people who agree on the role of America in the world and agree on a strong national defense. And in fact, both of these members of that committee agree that Putin has to be stopped and that it's an American interest, that we did, in other words, that we have an interest in Ukraine winning, not like Marjorie Taylor Greene, who says, you know, we have no stake in it. But where they disagree, and this is the new bit, is on whether or not they're going to vote for the actual funding to back up what they say. And, you know, it's hard to get a count exactly right now because every couple of hours another Republican comes out against the Ukraine aid. So the numbers are going up and they're going up fast.
The Republican decision to back away, is it poll-driven? Where does it come from? Is it Donald Trump-driven? What inspired it? Because we've heard the opposite for more than a year about supporting Ukraine because they'll be in Poland next.
No, I think it's a combination of factors, a perfect storm in a way. One is Donald Trump, and he's the presumptive nominee. And as we get closer to the presidential election, the party has to line up behind the nominee. Okay, for reasons that are obvious, like it doesn't make sense for the party to be legislating a foreign policy that the nominee that they're supporting doesn't agree with, but also in a practical way, because those endorsements and a lot of these members are going to would face primaries if they don't stay in Trump's good graces. And that's a real thing that they have to worry about. So why are they getting primary? That leads us to the second major factor, which is that there is a lot of discontent about Ukraine amongst the younger, more national conservative, more, not exactly MAGA world, but let's just say not anti-establishment parts of the Republican base. And that's based on some legitimate grievances about how the transparency and accountability of the money that's spent and about what our government is telling us about, you know, what the realistic proposition is for this war to end and when. And, I don't dismiss those legitimate grievances, but it's very hard for anyone to sort of dissect those from what are some very illegitimate grievances, which is sort of a disinformation cycle that says that, oh, well, NATO started the war and the Ukrainians really want to be attacked by Russia, or that Zelensky's a Nazi and that Putin's not a war criminal. So you've got that web of horrendous kind of disinformation. And then you've got some legitimate points about the costs that this is imposing. And then you add Trump, and that's like the stew that puts us where we are today.
The puzzle also, Josh, given what we've learned about Russian conduct, it's allied with China. It's allied with Tehran. It's allied with Pyongyang. Is that not persuasive that the contest in Europe is not just about Ukraine?
I find it persuasive. I don't think that the majority of this part of the Republican Party still finds it persuasive. And to be sure, there are, again, some people who will say, well, we should divert resources from Ukraine into the Indo-Pacific to protect Taiwan. But I'm persuaded by the view that actually, no, handing over Ukraine to Putin is probably the most dangerous thing that we could do, and would be a green light for China to do all sorts of things, not to mention North Korea and Iran as well. So, you know, you could have an academic disagreement over that. But again, I don't think this is driven really by a policy. It's a culture issue. There's a culture war going on inside the conservative movement, inside the Republican Party. And the part that's winning right now is the part that says the Ukrainians are on their own, and that's over there and that's not over here. There's plenty of intellectual sort of layers that you could flap over that. But at the core, it's really about this group taking over the Republican Party against the will of the congressional leadership, which is slowly but surely buckling under its weight.
Last moment here. The president has skills about getting funding to what he wants. Can this be done under emergency procedures without Congress's permission? We have about a minute.
I think what the White House is counting on is that Mitch McConnell and Chuck Schumer will get it done for them, and somehow the Senate will be able to bully the House into just doing what it wants after the shutdown happens. I think that's the plan, as far as I know. I think it's a pretty risky plan, and I don't know what the alternative is. And, you know, there's a very good chance that that it could all fall apart. I hope it doesn't. And if it does, what's going to happen is that, you know, they'll be able to rework the math and to stretch it as long as they can, maybe even until the next election. But then depending on who wins the next election, all bets are off.
Josh Rogan writes global opinions for The Washington Post. The names of the two congressmen are important to remember because they're decorated military veterans, Michael Walsh of Florida and Pat Ryan of New York. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.